Welcome to Pod Ski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, in all the years that we have been doing this show, nearly 10 years now, I think it's fair to say that we both said some pretty outlandish things. It's kind of par for the course when you have done, by my count, over 270 episodes, plus how many Patreon shows and post-game shows and pre-game shows and special episodes. We've really racked up the amount of time that you and I have spent here talking about the CFL, talking about Ticats. So it's bound to come out that we'd say some things that are pretty silly, pretty ridiculous, things that maybe make people step back a little bit. But on your, I think it was your latest edition of your Ticats fan feedback Patreon show, cheap plug for that, you said something that I think might be the most unacceptable thing that I have ever heard. You claim that you had never heard of Canadian institution, beloved Canadian institution, Beaver Lumber. It was basically Home Depot before Home Depot came to Canada. They shut down, I believe it was 2000, 2001. So it definitely existed during your lifetime, especially times you would remember. How on earth had you never heard of, let alone been to, a Beaver Lumber when you were a kid? Defend yourself, you bloody heathen.
Well, the lead up to this would have people thinking that I said something egregiously, you know, racist or terrible.
You said something terrible.
It's about Beaver Lumber.
The importance of Beaver Lumber. That is more important than anything.
What is your attachment to Beaver Lumber? Huh? Okay, so Beaver Lumber, did it come in like a Home Hardware or something? Or was it a separate entity?
No, it was a whole big store. So for Hamiltonians listening to this, they're probably screaming at their whatever device they're listening on, talking about the one that was at on Fennel. I know you didn't grow up in Hamilton, but Hamilton, most of our listeners are Hamiltonians. Fennel Avenue, where the Harvey's is, everyone knows it. Near Limeridge Mall, there was a Beaver Lumber there. It's now a Value Village. That's where the Beaver Lumber was. It was this giant hardware store, like I said, like a Home Depot.
And they sold lumber.
Yeah. Well, it, just like the Home Depot, they sold wooden tools.
Right. Well, in my defense, listen, I grew up in a small town, about 6,500 people. We had a Home Hardware. We had a Canadian Tire. We would visit the big city of Owen Sound to do our shopping sometimes. I say big city in quotation marks. So listen, I'm a bit of a country blumpkin, I suppose. And maybe I saw it when I was very young, Beaver Lumber, because I did look up the logo and everything, and it kind of did look familiar to me. But it just tickled my funny bone. I believe the question I asked was, who's your favorite coaches out of these four coaches? And
yes.
So the one answer was Al Bruno, because I saw him at a Beaver Lumber one time. And I thought that was very humorous. And I did go on to say, never heard of it.
Yeah.
And in that moment, I was drawing a blank on Beaver Lumber. And I'll just say, since you seem to love it so much, fuck Beaver Lumber, man. Like, take a hike. You know, it ended in 2001. It's over, Josh. Like, stop living in the past.
Oh, so we can't love things that ended that. Can we not be Ticats fans? The last time they won something was Beaver Lumber existed, went out of business, and has been gone. And the Ticats Grey Cup drought is longer than that. So should we stop cheering for the Ticats? Come on, man. It's not that I love Beaver Lumber. It's just I remember as a kid. I don't know why, but it was like my grandfather or my dad or my uncle, they needed a hammer or something. And you'd go to Beaver Lumber. And I just remember when's the last time you were in an actual hardware store? Like a Home Depot, for instance.
It's been a while, maybe a year or two, something like that.
Isn't there just like a smell that just takes you back to a kid? Like,
yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Like with your father, especially. Like I know moms can do handiwork, but it's really when, you know, for people are going with your dad and it's like, oh, I'm going to help him, I don't know, make a clock or something. Like my grandfather was very handy when I was a kid, and I just remember it's that smell. But it's just it's not so much that I love Beaver Lumber. I was just flabbergasted that you had never heard of it. I thought that the Beaver Lumber was just it was a Canadian institution. It was like Woolco or Woolworths, or, you know, maybe it's bringing me back to a time before like free trade agreement, and we didn't have all, you know, we didn't have Walmart and we didn't have Home Depot and we didn't have those places. We had our own Canadian institutions, and Beaver Lumber was one of them.
So you're saying that Beaver Lumber's downfall was all these, bigger companies from the
Oh, of
States or
course.
whatever coming in. Okay. Well, then I have some sympathy for that. It's not because they sucked at selling lumber.
No, I think they're pretty good at, I think they're pretty good at, pardon me,
Okay.
making me choke on my water. Yes, I think they were fairly decent. And Beaver Lumber is a great name for a hardware store because the beavers in the wood and the, I don't know. And
I
like you said, you
suppose
saw the logo. It's awesome.
it is pretty awesome, but is it not over the top Canadiana?
Oh,
Beaver Lumber,
the
get
only
out of
thing I
here,
think that would make it more
Beaver
Canadian is if
Lumber.
the logo was red and white instead of like, what is it, like yellow
Green
and
and yellow.
green, I think. Yeah, that's the only thing that would make it different. But yeah.
Well, that's fair. And there might be a lot of people out there that are cursing me right now, but in my defense, it was more just a funny thing to me that someone would choose their favorite coach because they saw him at Beaver Lumber, So.
it that is I got to give you that. That is, if you do go and sign up for the Patreon, listen to the episode, Mike does chuckle when it comes up. And I don't know if it was the name, because the name, thinking about it as an adult, it's like beavers
Kind of
and
humorous.
wood. It's like it's a very immature name if you're an immature person like you and I are. I won't
Yes,
speak for you.
yes.
I'm fairly immature.
You're right.
But
I
I
am.
don't know. It was just one of those things. Just reminded me of my like the Ticats winning Grey Cups. It reminded me of my childhood.
Yes, a better time. Yes, yes. I
Better,
can
a
relate to
better
that.
time. All right, enough Beaver Lumber talk. Let's talk some actual football. We're going to continue our Ticats positional talk this week. We discussed the quarterbacks the last time we got together. Today, we're going to talk about a pair of groups. We're going to talk about the running backs, and we're going to talk about the receivers. We'll start with the running backs. The Ticats currently have four running backs under contract. They are James Butler, Antti Milanovic-Leitre, and newcomers Calvin Tyler Jr. and Marcus Cooper. They also have two fullbacks, James Tuck and Felix Guerin-Gauthier. I initially had Bailey Feltmate here as he played fullback last year, but if you actually go to the Ticats website, they've A, updated a bunch of the numbers of the players for this upcoming season, and B, looks like they've moved Feltmate back to linebacker, so it looks like his time on the offense is done. I also, when if you again, not it's kind of a plug for the Patreon, but I did a Ticats kind of depth chart breakdown a few weeks back, and I had Thaddeus Moss in the fullback group, but then I listened to some interviews with him, and it sounds like he's going to be more of a they're going to try to make him into a receiver. He's talked about slimming down and stuff like that. And then a friend of mine actually brought up the fact that what if he's the new version of Nick Lewis? So we're going to talk about Thaddeus Moss with the receivers. But looking at this group of ball carriers here, Mike, Butler's more than likely going to be the starter. They get another Canadian backup. They bring in a true blocking fullback. What do you make of this group right now? Are you high on them, low on them? What do you feel about them?
I'm pretty darn high on them. We all know that we're big fans of James Butler, running the ball, blocking, catching the ball, all that stuff. He's just the complete running back. And then I like Leitre as well as like a rotation or a backup guy. You mentioned the fullbacks and some of the other running backs. I really like this group of running backs for Hamilton, and I have them placed at number one in the East Division. And it's there's some good running backs there. I mean, Toronto brought in what's his face from Calgary. He was like one of the best running backs in the league for a number of years. Montreal still has Antwi and some younger guys, and Ottawa has Devontae Williams, who showed some flashes last year. But if I was going to rank them, the Eastern Conference, I would put the Hamilton Tiger Cats at number one in that position group.
It certainly does feel like the Ticats have the best 1-2 combo, especially with Butler leading the way. Like Leitre is, I don't think he's been used enough to really, like, I don't think he's Sean Thomas Erlington. I think we've seen more out of Sean Thomas Erlington than we ever saw, but that could be more of a product of opportunity versus talent, so to speak. And Erlington got hurt a lot. So moving from a guy who missed a ton of games into a guy who, as far as I know, has played the vast majority. I'm going to look up his games played right now, actually, just to so I'm not speaking out of my ass, Like I want to be as up to date as I can be on this, but it looks like he's played most of his, like he hasn't missed a ton of games in his career. So I'm just oh, his stats are
He hasn't
don't
been
seem to be
used a
showing up.
bunch either, so
No,
like
that's
he
another
should be
thing.
quote
He
unquote have
hasn't.
fresh legs, right?
Yeah, that's it too. And of course, When you go to look up stats for CFL players, what do you get? Page not found. So I guess we'll have to table that for another day.
And but Kadeem Carey was the name that I couldn't.
Yeah, Kadeem Carey for the Argos.
That
yeah.
Toronto brought it.
Fullback wise, I really don't think there's a ton to really like discuss there. Like James Tuck's going to be like they don't get used a ton anyway. Garon Goche, I think, has like 15 career catches or something like that, and he's a decent player. But this is the James Butler show, right? Like, unless something drastic happens, and we can never discount the fact that one of these young guys could come in and blow the doors off the coaching staff, and you end up replacing a high-paid veteran with a younger guy. That doesn't happen a ton. This at like camp time, you don't really see these incumbent big-name players usually get replaced like that. Maybe it's something where they try to get them on the field, but this is really going to be the James Butler show, I think, for the vast majority of this upcoming season. What are your expectations for him this year? He finished third in the league in rushing last year. He was the first Ticat to have over 1,000 yards on the ground since DeAndre Cobb. Do you expect him to get even better this year? Do you expect the same? Like, where are you kind of hoping? What's the ceiling? Maybe the best way to put it is, what's the ceiling for Butler for you, and what's the floor?
I think like 1,000 yard rushing is no question. I think that he's got to hit that mark, because in a league where you play 18 games, you know, 1,000 yards isn't exactly, you know, a triumph anymore. But I would expect over 1,000 yards rushing. I would expect him to be a great blocker in the backfield, and I would expect him to get maybe close, you know, between 300 and 500 yards catching the ball as well out of the backfield, because he's going to be used a lot. If Bo Levi Mitchell is the, you know, stays healthy and is the starting guy for the Hamilton Tiger Cats, he's going to be doing those checkdowns to James Butler, especially in a Scott Milanovic offense. The checkdowns are a thing. So I would expect him to get over 1,000 yards rushing and close to 500 yards receiving and do a great job in the backfield blocking.
Well, last year he touched the ball almost 300 times. He had 1,116 yards rushing with 7 touchdowns. And he had 61 catches for 527 yards and 1 touchdown. So you're basically saying you expect him to be no worse than he was a year ago. And I think that's fair. Do you think that his numbers could even inflate under Milanovic, given that if you look at what his look at his stats per game, and under Scott Milanovic, 149 carries, 613 yards, so about 15 carries for 61 yards on average per game. And he had double-digit rushing attempts in every single game that Milanovic was the play caller. And then under Tommy Condell, it was 86 carries for 406 yards, and so about 10 carries for 51 yards per game. And only in half of those games did he rush the ball at least 10 times. So there's a concerted effort under Scott Milanovic to get the run game going. And that dates back to his time in Montreal with Avon Coburn, to his time in Toronto when he had Chad Kackert for all those years. So we know that they like to run the ball. We know that Milanovic likes to run the ball. Do you think that Butler could be, and again, individual accolades don't really matter, it's about team success, but do you think Butler could end up being the league's leading rusher, given what he produced under Milanovic and given a full season of that, what he could do?
It's a definite possibility. Like, I didn't even, put that into my thinking when you asked the question, but you're absolutely right that once Scott Milanovic came into the fold last year and was calling the plays, the run game was way more involved in the offense than it was.
And more effective, too. It wasn't just that it was more involved. It was also more effective. Like, I know that in this day and age, people like to talk about, oh, the running game doesn't matter and all that stuff. And I get from a statistical analytical sense, I understand, but Hamilton got better the more they relied on James Butler. Now, the hope is obviously that Bo will be better and playing all season, and you won't have to rely on a running back because the quarterback will be playing well, but it's really nice to have a guy who can kind of take over in that sense. There's not a lot of running backs. Like, I think Brady Olivier is probably the only other guy that you can say definitively can be the star of an offense from a running back perspective. So it's nice to have that. If things aren't going well in the passing game, you know that the running game can take over. And the blocking he got last year in the run game was a lot better than we've seen in years past. So it's kind of, it all kind of works together. But I just look at the opportunities he's going to get, and I think that he has a chance to maybe lead the league in rushing.
I totally agree. I think that the talent is there. I think that the offensive line in front of him is effective at run blocking to open up those holes for him. I think that the opportunity is definitely there for him to have a breakout season where he is the top running back in this league. I mean, you look around the league and there's some talented guys out there, but I'm not sure that they have the offensive line in front of them. I'm not sure that they're gonna utilize the running game as much as Scott Milanovich. So I think there's a definite possibility that James Butler leads the league in rushing this year.
So you mentioned that you'd have the Ticats group at the top of the East Division. I agree with you on that. Who do you think is the closest in terms of knocking him off the perch as the number one running back in the East? Is it Carey in Toronto? Is it Walter Fletcher, maybe? Jeshurun Antwi in Montreal? Devontae Williams? And then also after that, where do you – so you got Ticats first. How else do you play out this division when it comes to the running backs 1 through 4?
Listen, you mentioned the guys from Montreal and Ottawa, and they are not necessarily proven in this league yet. They've shown some good things, don't get me wrong, but if there was one guy, I would have to say Kadeem Carey. I try to remember if the Toronto Argonauts lost any offensive linemen in the offseason, but if we're judging by last season, they had a hell of an offensive line. So Kadeem Carey could probably be that guy that is the closest to James Butler.
This is kind of boring because I agree with you on that. I think...
Yep.
Again, it's the lack of knowing what the other two teams have at that spot. You know what I mean? It's a lack of, can Walter Fletcher be the guy over a full season? If not, can Antwi be that? We know Sean Thomas Arlington can be great in spurts. Can he stay healthy enough if he's got to come? Now, Montreal does have Mike Weber, who's a rookie. He played at Ohio State. He was a 2-time 1,000-yard back with the Buckeyes. That's an interesting under the radar candidate that maybe he's a guy who comes into camp and, think of it similar to 10 years ago with the Ticats and CJ Gable. CJ Gable came in, was known to college football fans because of his time at USC, but wasn't really a known factor. And then comes in as a rookie, takes over. Maybe Weber has the same sort of thing. And it's kind of the same in Ottawa with Devontae Williams. He looked good last year, but can he put it up over a full 18? So it's got to be Carrier. And even in Kadeem Carey got hurt in Calgary last year. Saw his is age and the wear and tear catching up to him. And I mean that could be a similar issue with Butler, although he hasn't played as much as Kadeem Carey, especially in the Canadian League. But it doesn't really look like, in my opinion, that there's anyone like Carey'd be the closest nipping at the heels. But I don't think I traded any one of these running backs in this division for James Butler.
No, I wouldn't either. But I will say that I think that Montreal's running attack has the chance to be better than it was last year. I think they were holding on to William Stanback for a little too long. I think he was long in the tooth. I don't think he was as effective as he was in that 1 year. I think he had one really good year, and then he kind of rode that for many years after. He's out of the fold in Montreal, and I think Antwi and Fletcher are more faster slashing backs that could be possibly more effective, gain them more yards. It might not be better in pass protection, but I think running the ball, they'll be more effective. And, to number the teams, I have Hamilton at number one with the running back position, Toronto number two, Montreal three, and Ottawa four. Just because Ottawa, Sean Thomas, we're both big fans of STE, but you mentioned his injury problems. Devontae Williams, showed him some flashes, but we don't know necessarily what he is. So Hamilton 1, Toronto 2, Montreal 3, Ottawa 4.
Yeah, I have them in the exact same order. And with Ottawa, it's just, what is
and
it,
the
2 years?
The line of Ottawa, too. I don't know how good they are either.
Yeah, I mean, we'll look at next week or next time we record, we're going to talk about the offensive lines of all the teams. So we'll get a better chance to kind of dive into that. But with Ottawa, it's for most of these things, any Red Blacks fans that do listen, I hate to say it to them, they're not going to like to hear this, but I'm skeptical on them until they prove me otherwise. You know what I mean? I don't like to.
You've been fooled before with Ottawa.
The last 2 years, I had Ottawa going to the Grey Cup 2 years ago. I thought they were going to be a playoff team last year. And you know what? And every year it's the same thing. So until I see that unfold, and people can come back on me and be like, you didn't believe in Ottawa in March. No, I didn't, because I believed in them in March the last 2 years and it bit me in the ass both times. So until they show me, I'm going to remain skeptical. Could I be wrong? Of course I could be wrong. But until we actually see it on the field, I can't put them above any team that, like, Walter Fletcher was a guy a couple of years ago when he was a free agent. I was enticed by Hamilton bringing him in to be their starting running back. Before they got James Butler, I thought, oh, man, Walter Fletcher would be – I didn't think James Butler was in the cards. And I thought, oh, Walter Fletcher would be a nice, like, semi-cheap, maybe a guy that could finally – if he finally gets his opportunity, could really shine. I'm enticed and excited to see what he can do in Montreal. So I do think – to me, like with you, it's Hamilton, Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa. But I think the gap between Hamilton and Toronto is much larger than the gap between Montreal – and Toronto. You know what I mean? Like, I think Fletcher is closer to Carey than Carey is to Butler right now. And I think it could very easily flip with Montreal overtaking him. And Montreal could overtake Hamilton, quite frankly, if Fletcher ends up having a good year. But yeah, I'm with you. I got them in that same order there. All right, running backs out of the way, Mike. Let's talk about pass catchers. The Ticats currently have 17 receivers on their roster, 11 Americans, 5 Canadians, 1 global. The big names, Tim White and Terry Godwin, are both back with new contracts. Keandre Smith returns after a breakout sophomore season. But the team also has Omar Bayless, Thaddeus Moss, Justin McGriff, Chris Coleman, Cameron Batson, Kalen Geiger, Devin Williams, Shamar Bridges, Johnny King, and Giovanni Robinson, who is their global. And then joining Smith in the Canadian receiving corps is free agent signees Luther Hakunavanu and Brandon O'Leary Orange, and the returning Tyler Tarnowski and rookie Jacob Patton. So you look at this group as a whole. What do you like? What do you dislike? What are kind of your thoughts on this? Are you happy with what you could potentially see as the starting five, which we'll get to next? Or are there still some worries here for you? How do you feel about the receivers as we sit here in the middle of March?
I wouldn't necessarily say I'm worried, but I'm not as confident in this group as I was with the running backs. Obviously, Tim White's a star guy. He's going to be productive. And then there's a lot of questions. I mean, Terry Godwin, I think, he's proven himself as a legit two or number three receiver. I think he'll be productive as well. But after that, I mean, Keandre Smith is a guy that we have very high expectations for, and we expect him to be even better than he was last year. But we don't know that he's going to be that. And then there's younger guys, like you mentioned, like all the names that they could have a spot on this roster, but we don't know how well they're going to play. You know, McGriff, Bayless, Moss, the names go on and on. So there's a lot of question marks within the receiving group, and I'm not hugely caught. Like, on paper right now, I would not put them at the top of the list in the Eastern Division by any stretch. So I'm not necessarily worried, but I'm not overly confident in this group either.
I think I'm higher on this group than you are, because I think White is a superstar, and I think he's a top five guy regardless of anything going on around him. The last 2 years he's been a top five guy with mediocre to worse quarterback play. So if he gets even a moderate uptick at the quarterback position, if Bo's healthy and better, or if Powell comes in and learn and like grows from his first year to his second year, White's numbers could be even larger. I was concerned before Tim White signed that Terry Godwin was going to be the number one, but now that Tim White's back and that pushes Godwin to that number two role, I like him there. I think he's a very solid number two. I think of White and Godwin as the new Banks and Tasker, quite frankly. And I think that's a pretty good 1-2 combination. I'm really high on Keandre Smith this year. I was high on him as a rookie. I was really high on him in his second year. And again, he's another guy that Scott Milanovich took over, and he really started to shoot up. Like, I thought at the end of the season, without even really looking at the stats, I was like, oh, he had about 500 yards. He ended up having over 800 yards receiving, which is pretty damn good for a guy that spent the vast majority of the year playing that wide side position. But then under Milanovich, he kind of moved into the slot, was able to use the waggle a little bit more, use his speed. He's a really fast dude. I think that can only get better now. Again, with these young guys that have been here, like Omar Bayless is a guy that I think, if given an opportunity, could take that leap. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be a 1,200-yard top-of-the-league guy, but you get these guys that have experience, and I always expect young guys, if they grew from year one to year two, I really expect them to grow from two to three. And if they looked good in year one, I expect them to look even better in year two. But then there is the basketball team that this team has assembled with Thaddeus Moss, Justin McGriff, and all those other tall guys. I think Robinson, King and Bridges are all 6'4", 6'5". I think Robinson might be like 6'7", 6'8". Like McGriff is 6'7". Like Moss is a bigger dude. There's guys here. Like I don't know what the makeup of the receiving core is going to be. We'll get to that in a second. But I look at the group and it's got enough proven talent, and it's also got that like up and coming guys that you with where there could be some expectations there. I actually really like the receiver group they have this year. I don't think there's much in the way. Like there's no Duke Williams secondary guy, which was nice on paper to have, but clearly didn't work out on the field. And I just look at this and I wonder if we're going to be seeing one of these really tall guys make this team. And then that kind of adds to the, cause that's not something we've really seen in this offense the last decade or so. Like when's the last, like Bakari Grant was probably the last really tall receiver that this team had. And we're going back now, geez, 8-9 years almost, you know what I mean? So it was kind of the June Jones kind of cut it off, and that the focus then became quick, speedy, and small. And that kind of carried over into Orlando Steinhauer's philosophy, even though that might not necessarily have been his philosophy, but he kind of kept the roster the same. You know, you had guys like Braylon Addison, you had Banks, you had Tasker. And Tasker's not speedy, but he is a smaller player. Now you see Scott Milanovic bringing these guys that are a little bit bigger, and we know from his time in Toronto, and I've said this plenty of times over the last few months, especially with all these receiver signings, look at what he did in 2015 in Toronto with three newcomers, Vidal Hazelton, Torrey Gurley, and Kevin Elliott. All those guys were like 6'2", 6'3", 6'4". So he likes those bigger receivers, especially, I think Gurley had like 11 or 12 touchdowns that year and maybe only had 800 yards, but he was a red zone threat. I could see one of these taller guys coming in, getting an opportunity, McGriff being at the head of the pack just because he was with the team in training camp last year, having an opportunity to kind of make plays there. And I think that would add a new dynamic that we haven't seen in this receiving core for a number of years now.
And it's funny you mentioned those three guys, and they kind of fell off the map.
Oh, yeah.
They left.
Well, they had attitude problems.
Milanovic's offense.
They had attitude problems. So, like they all went to other teams. They had a great like year and a half in Toronto, and then – we remember the Argos started losing in 2016. Like they came in 2015. The Argos were pretty decent. They made the playoffs. They finished third in the East. They won 10 games. And then they came back the following year, and there were we all remember the attitudinal problems they had. And they all shipped to Kevin Elliott, came to Hamilton. I think Hazelton went to Edmonton, and I think Gurley went to Toronto. And then a year or two later, they were done because the attitude didn't work. I don't know if that's going to necessarily be a problem, but you're right. They shown that, you know, they shot up the standings. Like they were up there. It was, you know, Icarus flying too close to the sun, and they flamed out really fast. But for that brief time, they were pretty damn impressive in that offense.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you foresee the Hamilton Tiger Cats playing two Canadian receivers?
I think so. I think the Hakuna Vanu signing really makes me I don't think you're not going to take Keandre Smith out of the starting lineup. I think he's earned that role, but especially last year, because he got a lot more playing time and a lot more opportunities under Milanovic. I don't see why you would take him out. And then I don't see why you go out and you sign Luther Hakuna Vanu for, I think it's reported, but $125,000 to just play special teams and be a backup. Yeah. You know, like that's a lot of money for a backup receiver when you already had Tyler Chynoski, when I imagine Brandon O'Leary Orange didn't cost that much, when you could probably have found a kid in the draft that you just wanted to play special teams. So I do get the feeling that Hamilton is going to play two Canadian receivers. And you look at the way the rest of the roster's made up, don't know if there's going to be a Canadian on the defensive line. So now you got to find another one that's going to be, and it's not, unlike last year though, when they did that, I don't dislike, I like their potential two starting Canadians this year more than I did a year ago. You know what I mean? Yes. Like Smith is a year older and a year better. And I think Hakuna Vanu is a better player than who did they try to say? It was Chynoski, but who else? There was someone else. Who the heck was the other Canadian receiver?
Chynoski and
It was Lamar Durant the year before, and that did not work out at all.
No.
I'm trying to remember.
He went to Toronto, didn't he?
Richie Sindani, thank you very much. Yes,
that's and Unger too, right?
And Unger yeah, Unger eventually went to Toronto as well. Yeah. But you're right. Last year was Richie Sindani was the second Canadian receiver, and I think Hakuna Vanu younger and is better than Sindani. So I think that they're better set up to play two Canadian receivers this year than they were last year. It's not something I wouldn't prefer. I prefer they only play one, but if you're going to play two, I don't hate the setup they have right now. What about you? You think they're playing two?
Yeah, I think so. Just because of your logic you laid out there. So that makes like one open position, right, in the receiving core. I mean, I'm assuming that the two Canadians would be Luther Okanaganu and Smith. Obviously, Terry Godwin's going to be the number two. Tim White. Who is that number three guy for you? Is it McGriff?
Right now it is McGriff. Like
Okay.
I want to say Omar Bayless has the leg up because he was here, but he's to me very similar to like a Terry Godwin. So I just look at the roster and I think Justin McGriff being that taller receiver, you kick him to boundary receiver where Terry Godwin plays, you move Godwin into the slot, allow him to use the shiftiness that he has might open up him a little bit more. So yeah, right now it is to me it's neck and neck between Bayless and McGriff, and I'm just giving a slight edge to McGriff just based on the different dynamic that he brings to the offense, basically the fact that he's a goddamn giant.
Yeah, he's a huge man.
Yeah.
But anything can happen in training camp, right? I mean,
Of
they brought in
course.
a ton of receivers, and we shall see. But if that's the five, then that's not too bad. Listen, it's not like they're on paper. You know what I mean? Like, it's not an all-star team, but it doesn't need to be. These guys could work out just fine, not being that names that you recognize right off the bat.
Well, and there's only one ball to go around, and Tim White's going to get his targets, and Terry Godwin's going to get his targets. So there's going to be guys who, like, maybe this is where a guy like Thaddeus Moss has a chance because he's not out there demanding targets. You know what I mean? Like maybe he having been a tight end, he can block and he can come in line, and they can use him instead of bringing on a sixth offensive lineman for those bigger packages. Like maybe that's kind of the role that he could fill should he make this team. And maybe that's why they were so interested in bringing him in, despite the fact that a player of his size doesn't really translate. Like I said, a friend of mine, when we were talking about him on, I think it might've been the last episode, maybe it was the episode before that, he said to me, Nick Lewis, like, what about Nick Lewis as kind of a comp for Thaddeus Moss? And I hadn't thought of that because Nick Lewis didn't come into the league as a big dude. Like he was a big dude, but he wasn't the Nick Lewis we saw at the tail end of his career in Calgary, Montreal. But I started thinking, man, Thaddeus Moss could be a Nick Lewis type, that bigger body that just kind of bulldozes and runs over dudes. Because you got to think, by the time Nick Lewis's career ended, he was pushing that 250, 260 mark, right? Like it's not as if he wasn't 220 running quick routes. He was a bulldozer out there. Maybe a Thaddeus Moss type, a guy who can get open in the end zone, can, for lack of a better term, moss people. Maybe that's where he gets an opportunity here. Maybe that makes a difference in the offense as well.
I mean, if Thaddeus Moss can be anything that Nick Lewis was early on in his career, I would take that in a heartbeat. Because Nick Lewis was
No shit.
he
Nick was a Hall
jumbled.
of
I mean,
Famer.
he was always a big dude. I mean, you're at the end of his career. I mean, he was a really big dude. But it was pretty incredible to watch him. At the size he was, even when he started out, to leaping people and running over people and doing all this crazy stuff on the field, he was a joy to watch.
Yeah, it makes with the fact that there is definitively an open spot in this receiving core right now, that makes it a really fascinating area to watch come training camp time. Because like I said, Omar Bayless feels like a guy who should have a leg up because he's been in the system. But then you bring in a Thaddeus Moss, you have a Justin McGriff. Chris Coleman is a guy who doesn't fit that size profile of those other guys, but he was with the team late last year. Maybe that gives him a chance. And of course, maybe one of these guys is going to be the return man. Like Cameron Batson is a speedy guy, played in the NFL with the Tennessee Titans. Like there's a lot of moving parts here. I think like you, four of those spots are locked in, but one is definitely open and there are a lot of intriguing options. And it'll be interesting to see kind of where they go with it, given Milanovic's previous love affair with bigger receivers, but also maybe this offense doesn't need that. Like it'll be very curious, very interesting to see over the course of training camp in a couple of months, just kind of how this works out. I'll be curious because I plan on going to day one of training camp at least. I'm curious to see how they line up offensively, who gets that first snap with the
Yes.
starting unit, because Justin McGriff was with the starters very early last year. And at this point last year, if we did this experiment, we wouldn't be talking about him at all. You know what I mean? We'd be, oh, it's these guys here that we think are going to be the stars. We wouldn't be talking about Justin McGriff, but that's what makes this stuff fun. We talk about these guys now, and then in a couple of months' time, it's like, oh, Thaddeus Moss is out there with the number ones, and he is getting an opportunity in the slot. And then it with there being that open spot, that open position in the receiving group, makes it a little more interesting to talk about this versus, say, the quarterbacks where we know who the starter is, the running backs where we know who the starter is. And next week, next time when we talk about the offensive line, we kind of know what they're going to be. This is the one area where the team has an opening, and there's a lot of really intriguing candidates to take that spot.
And I think you'd rather have openings at the receiver spot than, say, the
left tackle,
line,
yes,
or the offensive line or something like that, because there's so many talented receivers out there that you can find. Like we're seeing, there's a ton of receivers that they're bringing into training camp. So that it's easier to fill those holes than, say, another position group, in my opinion.
So you're not as high on this crew as I am, and that's fine. Where do you rank them amongst the pass catchers in the East Division? Toronto, I looked at the rosters they got. Rashid Bailey, DeMonte Coxey, DeVaris Daniels, those are kind of their top three Americans. You look at Montreal, some questions there. They brought in Tevin Jones. They still have Kayon Julian Grant. They still have Tyson Philpott. They still have Tyler Snead. Ottawa looks like they're trying to assemble an all-star crew at receiver, although it looks like an all-star crew that would be more suited for 2020, 2021 than maybe 2024. They got Jalen Acklin. They got Dominic Rhymes. They got Braylon Addison, Justin Hardy. Where do you look at the Ticats amongst this group? And then, of course, I didn't even bring up the Canadians. The Argos have Richie Sindani and David Ungerer. I did bring up the Canadians from Montreal. And then in Ottawa, Keaton Brungling is the only guy I could think of that would be a candidate to start Canadian-wise. Where do you kind of look at Ticats group versus these groups? Where would you kind of slot them in there? Are they at the top? Are they in the middle? Are they at the bottom? What do you think?
I have them at number three. I think, on paper, this is just on paper because obviously we haven't seen them perform on the field. I have Ottawa number one because, they brought in a guy like Dominic Rhymes. And you mentioned that I'm really high on Justin Hardy. Braylon is a guy that obviously has had his injury troubles, but I think he could be effective possession receiver. I think Jalen Acklin is still a really good guy to have on your team. So on paper, I'd have them number one. I have Toronto number two. I like their Canadian talent. I think, they're not as strong as they were last year. I think it's not quite what they were, but I still think they're very strong. Montreal, I really like their Canadian talent at receiver, but I still have them at number four because, they lost their main guy. Austin Mack was their main guy. He was their star receiver, and he's in the NFL now. So I have Ottawa, Toronto, Hamilton, Montreal.
You like the Argos receivers a lot more than I do, I think. I look at that group and I see Rashid Bailey, who's been fine. Coxey, who had a few good games. DeVaris Daniels, who is a good receiver. I don't like their Canadian receivers as much as you do. I think Hamilton's blows. Like, I think Keandre Smith is better. I think Tyson Philpott, maybe Kayon Julian Grant. So that's why I like Montreal's a little bit more, is that their Canadian receivers might be the only ones that are better than Hamilton's. I don't care for Toronto's. I don't know who Ottawa's is going to be. But like you on paper, you look at that Ottawa group, especially the Americans, and you're like, okay, if that stays together and stays healthy, that's going to be pretty darn good for any quarterback. I'm not as high on the Argos. And with Montreal, I love the Canadians, don't love the Americans. If Austin Mack was there, they might be number one. Austin Mack with those two Canadians, and you bring in Tevin Jones, and you still have Tyler Snead, that's a really good receiving core. Losing Austin Mack is a big, big blow to them. That's going to be a huge loss for Cody Fajardo in that passing attack. So, as like you, I got Ottawa first, but I got Hamilton second, Toronto third, and Montreal fourth. And Montreal is just because they don't have Austin Mack. Otherwise, Austin Mack to that group, like I said, they could be number one. Toronto feels like there's a lot of running it back. Like, the Argos lost a lot of talent, but where they did they really gain anything at receiver? Like, Rashid, like, they lose, what's his name? The Canadian Curley Gittens Jr.
Yeah.
And they kind of like, you're replacing him with Richie Sindani and David Unger. That to me is, that's a massive
downgrade. That's a really good point. And I totally agree with that. I think it depends who's throwing the ball in Toronto. Like, really, like, these receivers overperformed last year. I mean, a guy like DeVaris Daniels has always been a good receiver, but I feel like he overperformed last year because they had productive quarterback play. Same with Unger. I mean, Unger was didn't have any production really in Hamilton, and he had a pretty good year last year. So, the names may not be there that pop out, or because I'm with you, like, on their own, it's like they're okay. But I think if they have really good quarterback play like they did last year and that guy comes back, I don't even want to talk about it. But if he does come back, I think that he will, rise their game, so to speak.
No, that's fair. As much as you hate to say it, he did. Made them better. He made them better than the whole was better than the sum of its parts. And a lot of that was due to the quarterback play. And that's why I think Montreal could suffer, because I don't think the receivers are as good. And I don't know if Cody Fajardo can lift up his receivers in the same way. And then Ottawa's, to me, it's the receivers are going to have to lift up the quarterback. Like whether it's Drew Brown, who I'm assuming is going to be the starter, or Dustin Crum or Jeremiah Mazzoli, like it's an unknown in Brown. It's a young guy in Crum. It's probably a guy past his prime in Mazzoli. The receiving corps is going to have to do their best to elevate their games. But from a talent standpoint, it's hard to discount what Ottawa has amassed. But of course, like with anything, you can bring in all the all-stars you want. Doesn't make a damn bit of difference if the quarterback can't get them the ball. And that's why if the Argos do have a drop-off at quarterback, that receiving corps does not look as good. Whereas I look at Hamilton's group, and I think we saw Tim White put up numbers with Taylor Powell. We saw Terry Godwin put up numbers with Taylor Powell. We know, again, it may be because we follow this team a little more closely. That's why we're more familiar with it. But I've seen these guys play decently with substandard quarterback play, because that's all they got. Like, Taylor Powell was fine, but Taylor Powell wasn't leading anyone to a championship last year. Like, he just he went over expectations as a rookie. But if he's your starting quarterback, and I don't anticipate that he will be, but if he's your starting quarterback, you need him to be much better than he was last year. So we saw the Ticats receivers, Tim White in particular, led the league in receiving last year with substandard quarterback play and a half season where he barely got the ball. You know what I mean? So knowing what we know as intimately as we know it about the Ticats, I look at that group and I like them better because we know that they can be productive despite substandard quarterback play and piss poor play calling. I'm not sure I feel the same way about the other guys, because we look at Ottawa's group. Well, Jalen Acklin, Braylon Addison, and Justin Hardy were all in Ottawa last year, and they all put up decent-ish numbers, but that team wasn't very good. Now, they add Dominique Grimes, and that's a big game changer, but how much does that matter when the coaching staff is a question mark, when the quarterback is a question mark?
And you know Ottawa has added game changers in the last 2 years, and it hasn't done anything for them. So, but that's an interesting point about raising the play of the quarterback, because I think last year Montreal did that for Cody Fajardo.
Yes.
Especially in the Grey Cup game. I mean, Austin Mack with that one-handed grab, Philpott at the end of the game with that great catch in the end zone to win it for them. So, there's going to be a lot of questions answered about Cody Fajardo this year.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing with Fajardo, too, is some guys use that championship, they get the championship monkey off your back, and I know he won a Grey Cup when he was with the Argos, but he was a third-string quarterback. But as a starter, since he was the guy in Saskatchewan, you get that off your back. Sometimes that can free guys up, but sometimes it can also be a hindrance. Now you're expected to be the guy that leads. And we saw Fajardo struggle with that a little bit in Saskatchewan. Now, maybe being in Montreal where the spotlight's not as bright, the microscope isn't as large, maybe that helps as well. But you look at that receiving core, and he's going to have to lift those guys up in a lot of ways. And we'll, like you said, we're going to get those questions answered this year, whether he can do it or not. It's funny though, because I look at the receiving groups as a whole for all these teams, and they all look decent, but I wouldn't say any of them are, like, there's no Speedy Banks, Braylon Addison, Luke Tasker, three-headed monster. Maybe Ottawa has that, maybe not, I don't know. There's no, like, remember when Ottawa had Chris Williams and Ernest Jackson and Brad Sinopoli and Greg Ellingson? You're just like, God damn, that's a – none of these teams
have
that.
And they all produced. And they all got the ball.
They all had 1,000 yards. And, I mean, they had Henry Burris as their quarterback, so they bloody well better producer. He was going to, bite their heads off. But I don't look at any of these receiving groups and think, oh, they have that much. Like Tim White's good. Tim White's great. Terry Godwin's good. Keandre Smith, we expect to be good. You look at Dominique Grimes, he's on par with Tim White. Maybe a slight downtick because of age, but I'd say they're around the same. It's a lot of tier two guys. You know what I mean? And there's only a couple of tier one. Like DeVaris Daniels, good receiver, wouldn't put him in the top tier of receivers in the CFL. So it's interesting that we're probably going to get a better idea based on these receiving cores of how good the quarterback play is in this division. Yeah. Maybe more so than we'll find out how good the receiving groups are. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and for two out of the four teams, there's question marks at the quarterback position, right? I mean, Ottawa, who are they going to go with? Probably going to be the guy they brought in from Winnipeg, but you don't know. There's a lot of talent there with Mazzoli and Crum and all that stuff. And then with the Toronto situation, you don't know who's going to be the starting quarterback there, although we'll see. We'll see.
Well,
But yeah, there's.
we'll table the Toronto quarterback
Yeah.
news for another time. I mean, there's even questions in Hamilton. Like, yes, Bo's going to be the starter, but we don't know how good he's going to be. It's been a long time since Bo's been great. And then if Taylor Powell comes in, how, you know what I mean? Like, so it's solidified in Hamilton right now, but it's solidified only until it's not. And that could come at some point this season. Like, I don't know if Scott Milanovic is going to tether himself to Bo Levi Mitchell in the same way that Orlando Steinhauer would have, you know? Because it wasn't, yes, it was Milanovic's was part of the brain trust that kept Bo, but he wasn't part of the brain trust that brought him in. So I do wonder if the leash might be a little bit shorter, but yeah, there's still there's to me there's a smaller question in Hamilton just based on off-field stuff than in Toronto. So I do agree with your main point.
Yeah, absolutely. But like you said, there are questions in Hamilton. Is Bo going to be a guy that we can depend on? Is he going to get injured? Is Taylor Powell going to take that next step in year two if he is forced to be the starter of this team? So I'd say there's a lot of questions with the Eastern Division teams, even with a team like Montreal who won the Grey Cup last year. We don't
And an
know how
Argos
they're
team
going
that
to.
won 16 games. Like the Argos
Yeah,
had tied for
exactly.
the best record in the league, and one of the
Yep.
teams won the championship. And we're still sitting here going, who knows?
Yeah, it could be the complete opposite in Montreal. It could be, last year we were like, oh, it's going to be a tire fire. And then this year they're the Grey Cup champs and maybe they have a steep decline. Who knows?
Who knows? I mean, of course, we start talking about receivers and obviously end up talking about quarterbacks. So a piece of CFL news that I wanted to discuss with you, Mike. The combine, the CFL combine kicks off Thursday in Winnipeg. There's going to be, that's where, you know, dozens of draft eligible players strut their stuff for the various decision makers across the league. Last year at this time, the CFL was taking a ton of heat for not airing the quote unquote underwear Olympics last year. And it seems to have been rectified this year. They're going to air the combine on their CFL Plus streaming service. I'm sure we covered this last year. I don't remember how we felt. Maybe we didn't because you and I are not exactly draft people. But how do you feel about this? The CFL cover, like, they're going to show the 40, they're going to show the bench press, they're going to do all that stuff. Are you happy that this is out there? Do you even care? Will you watch it? What are your thoughts on the combine getting some airplay here?
I think it's a good thing whenever you can put content out there. I think the CFL should do that. But that being said, I'm not overly interested. Maybe if I have time, I'll watch it. But it's not something I'm going to necessarily seek out. Like you said, we're not really high on the draft, or we don't hyper focus in on the draft, I should say. So to me, it's like man, it's like kind of like an all-star game. You know what I mean? Like I would be fine with the CFL having an all-star game, but it doesn't really interest me. But I can see that the fan base as a whole would enjoy that. So I can see why it would be a good idea to have it.
Do you think the fan base as a whole actually cares about the combine, or do you think this was just another way for people such as myself to jump on the league for not doing something that they probably should? Because like the big thing is like the NFL airs the combine on the NFL Network, and that was a couple of weeks ago now. And I love the NFL. I'm a big NFL guy. Didn't watch a second of it because I don't care. I won't watch this, quite frankly. Do you think it's really a point of fans actually give a damn, or it was just here's another way that we can kind of, because CFL fans, and I lump myself into this category as well, love to tell the league when they're not doing things the way that they should. And I guess in this day and age when everything should be televised or streamed or broadcast in some way, it makes I understand it, and that's probably why I get involved in some of these discussions. But do you think people actually give a damn that this is going to be on CFL Plus? Like, I can't imagine this is going to be very widely viewed.
No, that's the thing, right? I think there's a large majority who just like to bitch online, and that's within any fan base or yeah. So I think that's a large part of it. And I think you're right. I think you will see in the numbers that there's not a ton of people tuning in, but they want it to be there just because they want it to be there, type of thing.
Because it should be, right? Because they think it should be.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Exactly. And you hear about the draft every year too, make a bigger deal of the draft and all that stuff, but whatever.
My problem with this, and this is kind of tied into my thoughts on the draft. And now that I don't work for a bunch of people who lionize the CFL draft, I feel more comfortable saying this. I think the CFL draft is incredibly overrated. I think the combine is maybe one of the physical activities. Now, the CFL combine does one thing that the NFL doesn't, and that is they actually have players go one-on-one. They have offensive linemen battle defensive linemen. They have defensive backs battle receivers. That's the one interesting part about this that we don't get anywhere else. But the testing numbers, let me ask you this. Who had the fastest 40 at last year's combine? Do you know?
No idea.
If I told you it was a receiver out of York, would you even be able to guess a name?
No.
His name was Gabriel Apai Kubi. Mm-hmm. Do you know where he went in the draft? Do you know if he was drafted at all?
No, I don't. I don't. I'm not going to lie.
Neither do I. And I'm not going to even pretend that I do. The bench press last year. Do you know who had the most reps of 225 on the bench press last year?
I'm assuming it was a defensive lineman or an offensive lineman. But that's all I asked.
It was an offensive lineman. It was Philip Grohavec out of Western University. Do you know which team he plays for in the CFL?
Negative.
This is what I'm talking about. And we admit we're not draft guys. But when the top picks in the NFL draft, you know who's going number one overall, just testing numbers be damned, but you know who's going to go down. They made a huge deal out of someone breaking the 40-yard record at the combine this year. Like, you know that stuff there because I think you get bigger game changers, and I know that this is, you know, stating the obvious. You get franchise-altering game changers in the NFL draft. You don't get those in the CFL draft. You just don't. I don't think you're ever going to get people to care about who's got the first pick this year. Is it Edmonton? I think it is Edmonton. You're not going to care that they're going to take some lineman out of the University of Calgary. You know what I mean? Like, you
not sexy enough.
It's not. Like... So 2 years ago, you know who set the bench press, who had the most reps in the bench press? It wasn't an offensive or defensive lineman. It was a running back. It was Daniel Adebaboye, who I know plays for the Toronto Argonauts. And he barely plays. You know what I mean? Like, he barely plays, and yet he was the guy that had, like, do you remember Johnny Augustine? He had a great combine and then didn't get drafted. Like, I just think that these things, I think the desire for these things are less, and I think their importance is elevated because certain people who have a voice want these things to be elevated. But I just don't think that there's a lot of people that care. Do you really care where your starting Canadians come from? Like, yes, the draft is important in grabbing those guys. Hamilton wouldn't have Stavros Katsantonis if they didn't draft him. But with the player movement the way it is, and all, like, I just feel like the draft is, it's fun to think about, but I don't think enough people care. And I don't think there's enough franchise altering players that come out of the draft that to make people care. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's tough for a league like the CFL, you know, just the nature of the league. The draft is like, you're just not going to have superstars coming in. You know what I mean? Like, obviously the NFL, because it's the number one league in the world, you're going to get, and because people pay attention to college football in the States and they know these players and they're built up and they're quarterbacks and they're star players and all that stuff, you're just not going to get that in the CFL. CFL draft is not conducive to bringing in big name players. It's just free agency is wildly more interesting to me because you're going to be bringing in players that will have an impact immediately. Or that's the plan anyways. With the CFL draft, these guys aren't going to be playing right off the bat. And there's exceptions to the rule, obviously. But for the most part, it's linemen. You know, it's non-sexy positions that, you know, if you're not a freak like me and obsessed with the offensive line, then you're not going to really care. And even a guy like me, who's obsessed with the offensive line. You know, I watch the draft, I'll pay attention, but it's just not overly important to me.
Well, and the thing too, it's like even those offensive linemen, like Hamilton's first pick last year didn't start. You know what I mean? Like, even though you're taking a guy in the opening round, and it's like, okay, but you have to wait sometimes a year or two before you even see him on the field. And in this day and age of instant gratification and the desire to see these new guys, it's always fun to have the new toy, right? But it's not fun if you buy the new toy and then sit it in the package for a year and don't play, you know, and not, you're not allowed to play with it. Like, you want to see these guys get on the field. And even if they are offensive linemen or defensive linemen or whatever, it's still better to see them on the field. We just don't see that in the CFL. I think, again, this is kind of getting way off topic here, that an American draft of some sort, I'm trying to work out the logistics of it and how you can make it work, would be better than what we have. I think if because they've added the global draft with the Canadian draft, I do wonder if you added an American draft, which is where guys would have to declare for it in a similar sense they do to other drafts, saying that they have agreed that they'll come to the CFL. I think that might drum up more interest in the entire draft process if you did all those on one day versus a Canadian draft that I just think has limited appeal. I really do. And it's like, I've tried over the years to care. I pay a little more attention to U Sports football than I did 10 years ago, but there's only so many football games a 42-year-old man with other interests and other things to do in life can watch. I can't devote as much time to it as I could when I was 25. And I just think that this whole hubbubaloo over the CFL not airing the combine was simply just people wanting to complain about the CFL not providing something. And most of those people won't tune in this year. Like, I just don't think that the desire, and this is where I don't blame the league for not doing them. Now, maybe it's a point of, you know, if you build it, they will come. So, oh, we'll show these things, maybe more people. But it's just, I don't know, man. This just feels like all content is good content. So I'm not going to knock them for putting it out there. But I just don't know if that many people really give a hoot about what's going to be going down this weekend. I just don't.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that, you know, it's unfortunate for the people that put in all that work to, you know, invest in these players, or not invest, but, you know, put out their draft stock and, you know, what they're good at and all this stuff. And then, like, you know, the majority of them don't even make the league, but they have this long list of their attributes and how good they are and all this stuff. And I'm like, really? Like, how do you even know that much about every single player? Like, I don't know. It's just weird to me that they overanalyze all these players.
My hot take on that is they don't. My hot take is that they watch the same games that we do. They get copies of the broadcast games and they try to come up with analysis.
In-depth analysis. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there's no coaches film. These guys, they don't have access to that. Like, you can't get coaches film on CFL games. You're not getting coaches film on junior football players or U Sports. You're just not.
Yeah, that's always funny how some people are like, oh, I watched the film. You mean the television broadcast? You mean that? Yeah. That's not film.
Which is the worst thing to do to try to analyze. If you're going to go that route, like be super analytical and talk about like DVOA and coverage schemes and watching the TV broadcast, I think needs a complete overhaul in how we watch football. Like, I think this is getting completely off topic, but the way that football is aired on television with the sideline camera, I think is idiotic. It doesn't show you anything versus the Madden camera that you have to use when you play Madden, when you're behind the quarterback and you can see everything. That's the camera we should be watching these games on. But people, I know they've tried that in the past in spots and people have hated it because it's different, but that's the way that we should be watching. Like, every other sport does the sideline thing because every other sport you're not like baseball, you don't need to watch the left fielder scratch his nuts while a pitcher's pitching. In hockey, you can basically see the puck. Like, you just follow the puck and everyone's kind of like, there's not intricate plays. Even in basketball, you're in the half court. Well, you can show the entire half court when the team's on offense. With football, there's so much happening down the field and coverages. It's just a horrible, horrible way to broadcast the game. If they went to the behind the Madden view, even though people might hate it at first, you'd get used to it. You'd be able to see so much more. And then maybe you can talk about how you can watch film. But until then, you're just watching the same stuff we're watching on TSN. And I mean, I can't glean how good some player, like, it's easier live because you can see everything, but it's certainly not easy to do when you're watching the television broadcast.
No, absolutely. There's so much more that they could show with a football game, and they choose not to. So whatever.
Yeah, it's lazy. It's laziness. Anyway, so you won't be watching the combine this weekend?
Probably not. Yeah, probably not.
Me neither. But if you're out there and you are watching the combine, hit us up and tell me why. Tell us why. I'm just kind of curious as to what the interest is here, because I don't know. I don't really see it. But anyway, we'll be back in a couple of weeks. We're going to talk your favorite thing, Mike. We're going to talk offensive line. We're going to dig into the Ticats O-line. We're going to dig into the O-lines of the teams across the league, rank them. I'm sure that's something you've been waiting these last few weeks for. And of course, we'll talk about any major Ticats. Been kind of quiet on the Ticats front the last few weeks, isn't it?
Like, yeah.
Like they signed a couple of players. I think they signed a half dozen players last week, but it's been awfully, awfully quiet from the team, which maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's a bad thing. I guess, you know, we're kind of in that dull period though, as we're less than 2 months from the start of training camp. So that's at least a positive, right?
Yeah. And I would say that there's been, you know, not a ton of news with, you know, transactions with teams recently either. So it's not just the Ticats, but you're right. It's been hard for me to get any Ticat content for our Patreon shows, but I make it work.
Yeah, it's been a little quiet. We do have some Ticat. Speaking of Patreon shows, Mike and I have put out, Mike's put out right as of now, your top five Ticats. Mine will be coming out on Thursday. And then the following Thursday, you will hear us. I don't know if it's going to be so much of a debate because we're
more
talking
of a discussion.
About like, yeah, it's more of a discussion on maybe why we had guys where we had them or why we had guys off and on. Yeah, it's not, I don't think it's going to be as combative as we were with the quarterbacks where we used more accolades versus kind of gut feeling on stuff, but I still think it'll be fun. So if you want to hear who Mike has as who he thinks is his best Ticat, who I have as mine, come and join us over on Patreon. We'll have it there. But until then, that has been Pod's QB for this week. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.